Sí.
Not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
This is Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth. I'm Dean Becker. Our producer is Steve Nolan, and you're listening to KPFT Houston. This show marks our first time broadcasting digitally on Radio Amigo, channel 147 on the Sirius satellite radio dial. Our guest tonight is the noted journalist and publisher of Narconews.com, Mr. Al Giordano. A bit later, we will feature the words of Irvin Rosenfeld, who later this month celebrates 20 years of using Uncle Sam's marijuana to make his life more tolerable. We'll also feature our latest War of Terror comedy playhouse, this time focusing on the religious zealots that conspire with the government moralists and the media to condemn nonviolent drug users to prison. Steve will have the Activist Corner to alert us to ways we can help to end the war on drugs. And later, if there are any cops or DAs, judges or doctors, ministers, whoever out there who dispute anything we say here, please give us a call. We want to hear from you. And we'll even put you on the air as a guest. Our number here is 713-526-5738. And now for the news. If the Homeland Security Act is not amended before passage, here is what will happen to you. This from William Sapphire of the New York Times. Every purchase you make with a credit card, every magazine subscription you buy, and every medical prescription you fill, every website you visit, an email you send or receive, every academic grade you receive, every bank deposit you make, every trip you book, and every event you attend, all these transactions and communications will go into what the Defense Department describes as a virtual centralized grand database. Surely Osama bin Laden must have won the war of terror, and American democracy is now on the run. Thanks to Bush, Ashcroft, Walters, Hutchison, and Poindexter. This Ashcroft's Narco-Terror Awards by Joan Mariner, announcing the arrest last Wednesday of suspects in two drugs for weapons deals, Attorney John Ashcroft declared the war on terrorism has been joined with the war on illegal drug use. One could almost hear him lick his lips, savoring the thought of it. Never notable for its success, the drug war juxtaposed against the more menacing threat of terrorism has begun to seem like a dispensable extravagance. Ashcroft would no doubt be the last person to acknowledge this. It must have been straight away obvious in the wake of September 11th that the best way to revive the drug war would be to piggyback it on the war against terrorism. That Ashcroft would seek to join the two was probably a given. The drug war and the war on terrorism do resemble each other in many important ways, although not those that Ashcroft emphasizes. Both efforts are open-ended or maybe never-ending. The drug war is not a conspicuously unsuccessful war. It is a misguided one. Reviving it under the guise of fighting terrorism and possibly making it more warlike in the process will only make matters worse. This, again, from the New York Times author Bill Berkley. From the well-appointed offices of Lehman Brothers in Lower Manhattan, federal prosecutors say Consuelo Marquez, a Barnard College graduate and by all appearances an important success story, laundered tens of millions of dollars in Mexican drug money. Using the firm's good name, the prosecutors contend, Ms. Marquez, now 39, set up a labyrinth web of shell companies and offshore accounts from Switzerland to the Bahamas at the behest of one of Mexico's most notoriously corrupt public officials. For all its lurid elements, which almost seem to come right out of Traffic, the hit movie on the drug trade, the episode provides a particularly instructive tale about what some prosecutors and experts on money laundering say is the all-too-common blending of crime and legitimate commerce in the netherworld of private banking. Quote, money laundering is such a huge problem here in the States, quote, end quote, said Edward Edward M. Gillen, chief of the Drug Enforcement Agency's final investigation section. The only way we will get results is if we diligently investigate and prosecute not only individuals, but the corporations that allow their facilities to be used. In closing, they say this is one of the most egregious examples in recent years of a financial institution lending its resources to laundering what they knew or should have known were drug proceeds in large sums. Said Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, "We can't condemn corruption abroad and then tolerate U.S. financial institutions making fortunes out of it." This from the Houston Chronicle, drug suspects' ties to CIA noted. A Danish-born Houston-area resident accused in a drugs-for-weapons deal involving Colombian terrorists is a former informant who believed the U.S. Government backed the operation. His attorney told the paper on Tuesday. This sounds a bit like the Shades of Man of Arkansas. They stated last week, Jensen, Romero, and two alleged Colombian terrorists were charged in a criminal complaint with conspiracy to distribute cocaine and to provide material support and resources to a foreign terrorist organization. As an informant, Sundi said his client saw firsthand the U.S. government's support of Colombia despite its knowledge of the Colombian Army's collaboration with paramilitary groups. Amnesty International and other human rights groups have complained for years about paramilitary groups doing the Colombian Army's dirty work. Another story, this comes from the Washington Post. Colombia's air assault on coca leaves, farmers in its dust. 3 months of the most intensive U.S.-sponsored aerial spraying to date has devastated coca crops in this key cocaine-producing region of southwestern Colombia. The spraying has covered more than 115,000 acres of coca. The success, however, has come at a high cost for thousands of peasants who live here on small farms cut out of the jungle. The problem is that this hasn't just ended coca, but everything else too. The military resources and a special U.S.-trained anti-drug brigade have failed to make a lasting dent in an industry that supplies 90% of the cocaine reaching the United States. One last story here. This week's current corrupt cop story. On November 5th, a Putnam County, Georgia sheriff's investigator went down for doctor shopping to feed his prescription pill habit. The next day, four guards at the Washington, D.C. Correctional Treatment Facility run by Corrections Corporations of America, the nation's largest private jailer, were indicted for smuggling drugs, pagers, and cash to prisoners. But this week's winner is in Donna, Texas, the police department where old habits apparently die hard. The police chief, Abel Parida, and former officer Gregardo Vigil were indicted and arrested on federal drug trafficking and bribery charges. Padrida and Vigil were following in some familiar footsteps. 5 years ago, the feds arrested and convicted the five Donna police officers, including two police chiefs. Donna, located 50 miles from the Mexican border, bills itself as the heart of the Rio Grande Valley. But a better slogan might be, where the drug war makes corruption a way of life. One final bit of news. It seems there is a particularly bad batch of heroin loose on the streets of Houston. And if you're one of those who indulges with that product, please be careful. Okay, I often ask, what will it take? What is the critical mass that will cause the end of drug prohibition? And as all these stories have indicated, I think it's time. I mean, when you got that much corruption and graft greed and weasels, it's just time to make a change. The news tonight says it should be over. But, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars laundered in the U.S. by banks that love prohibition. Thousands of patients that need a reliable and cheap medicine are instead forced to buy the overpriced, overvalued medicines that the pharmaceutical houses insist that we use. National and international leaders are calling for decrim, legalization, regulation. Yet the corrupt and lying weasel cops, keep getting busted by the bushel full. The jails are starting to fill with our law enforcement officers. And our rights are being taken away by the new, yet old war of terror for the security of the rich. Collusion again of the CIA and drug smugglers, it never ends. Well, let's welcome our show he may have a few answers to some of these questions. I'm real proud to welcome a journalist and publisher of NarcoNews.com. Thank you for joining us, Al Giordano. Are you there, Al?
Yes, and you're a hard act to follow. A great newscast.
Thank you, sir. Al, what's hot on the burner? What do you want to talk about tonight? I got a lot of questions, but what's hot on your mind?
Oh, I think you should just start in with your questions. I my eyes are crossed. We've been receiving applications at a rate of 10 or 20 an hour.
Wonderful.
For the Narco News School of Authentic Journalism. Many beginning journalists and journalism students from throughout the entire hemisphere, in fact, from throughout the world, have been sending in their applications, and tonight at midnight California time, so there's still a couple hours left, is the deadline. So they've been pouring in here, and we've been reading them, and that's been just one of the tasks of today. But anyway, what we're trying to do is create a more honest media, a media that's more responsive to not what the advertisers want, not what the power structures want. And by the way, it's a wonderful pleasure to be talking to Houston, Texas, where men are men and even drug addicts can become president. But what the people want, that's what's important. The media has to serve the people. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution was set up to protect freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And it didn't say, well, these people have press passes, and therefore they have freedom of the press, and these people don't, and therefore they don't. No, it said freedom of the press for everybody, because for democracy to function, everybody has to be a journalist in a certain way, and every journalist has to be a human being, of course. So this is one of the things we're very busy with Narco News.
Well, Al, I'd appreciate it if you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit more about what the journalism effort is about, and the fact that isn't there also a concurrent international conference down there at the same time?
Well, as you know, I'm talking to you from Latin America tonight, and where I've been for 5 years. And one thing I discovered, I mean, before I came to Latin America, I had written for the Washington Post. I had written for 20 other United States newspapers and magazines, well, actually many more than 20. I'd been a political reporter for the Boston Phoenix and a staff reporter for other newspapers. I used to do radio, not as well as you do it, but I used to do it. So I came down to Latin America very discouraged with the state of the United States media, with the corruption, with the pressures from advertisers, with the bureaucracy of media. It's becoming like a government agency. There's so many editors between the average writer and his or her readers. And what I discovered is that in Latin America, there's a more exciting form of authentic journalism being practiced, and especially on the drug war. There are not the pressures here that there have been on United States media institutions to kind of shut up about it all. And more stuff has gotten through the cracks. So in the year 2000, I started a little website called NarcoNews.com, the Narco News Bulletin, reporting on the war on drugs and democracy from Latin America. Well, the thing, this thing's kind of grown, you know. Now we just this past week hit 20 million readers in 2.5 years. But the important thing is the quality of each reader, that these readers are, I always like to brag, I have the best readers on earth. I mean, we break a story and people distribute it everywhere, and suddenly we're reading about it in the major daily newspapers and on national television in the United States. And that's the way but it has to be done. We have to break the information blockade. I mean, you're in Houston, you're very close to the United States-Mexico border, no?
Yes.
But how much authentic news do you really get from south of the border?
Chronicle carries basically, one story a week, filtered, you know.
And so the internet kind of allows us to break these information borders down and begin to talk people to people. Narco News, by the way, is un sitio bilingüe. It's a bilingual news site, so everybody can participate and can get this information and can write information, and this is how we've begun to do things. Of course, we've been sued by very powerful narco bankers, and we kicked their butts in New York court, and that generated, in fact, a lot of publicity. So funny how things work out. Here we are.
Yes, I wanted to tell you that I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show. This marks our first broadcast on the Sirius Amigo channel, which is a Spanish language program, but designed for Hispanic listening, and we do want to welcome them. I'm sorry, my Spanish is not good enough to attempt it here, but if you feel like it, you can.
Bienvenidos todos a la Red Sirius.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right, Al. You cover so many great, interesting stories. The one that caught my attention just recently here was Gustavo de Grief, the former former drug czar, I think he is, and ambassador
of Colombia. He was not the drug czar. He was the attorney general.
I'm sorry. Yes.
He had Ashcroft's job in the nation of Colombia. And then later on, he became Colombia's ambassador to the United States. And back in 1993, after he had captured Pablo Escobar, the notorious drug trafficker, after he had put 14,000 drug traffickers on earth, after the DEA, the FBI, the White House, 60 Minutes on CBS, and everyone else declared him the major drug war hero of the decade because of his courage in fighting these narco traffickers down in Colombia. He then went and gave a speech in Baltimore, Maryland. He came to the United States. He was invited by the mayor of Baltimore, who was then named Kurt Schmoke. And in his speech, he said, we will never end narco trafficking with the techniques we're using now. The only way to put a stop to narco trafficking and the violence, the corruption, and the destabilization of democracy that it causes is to legalize drugs. Well, those words exploded as if they were made of nitrogen and glycerin, no?
I would think, yes.
And the United States government turned on him. The press that had lauded him abandoned him. He was falsely accused with all kinds of horrible things that he was later vindicated on. The United States government took away his visa to travel in the United States, even though two of his kids live in the U.S. and many of his grandchildren live there. I mean, this is a very respectable member of his country's traditional elite, but he had committed the heresy of free speech, and so they had to. I mean, back then you didn't have the war on terrorism; you just had the war on drugs, right? But it's the same dynamic, and so he has. In fact, some years later, when his government nominated him to be the ambassador to Mexico, the United States government opposed his nomination as ambassador to Mexico by the nation of Colombia, and Mexico flipped to Washington the bird and said, no, Colombia can invite anyone it wants to be its ambassador. It's their ambassador, not yours.
Well, we like the regime change on our terms, I guess, these days. It sure seems like that.
Yeah.
Al, I wanted to ask you, do we have... We're trying something new tonight, and there's an organization out there, Drug Sense or Map Inc. I'm sure you know who they are.
Sure, wonderful group.
And they have a chat line, on the web. People get together on the weekends and kick it around and discuss ideas and information. And we have a question here from Trippin. He's from San Antonio. He's sending you a question.
Okay.
He's asking, what consequence do you see if the national security bill goes through?
You haven't the Homestead Act?
Right. Homeland Security Bill.
Homeland Security Act.
Yes.
Yes, excuse me. It's late. Well, I think there are many dangerous things in that legislation, but the most dangerous is giving a man named John Poindexter total power over really everyone in the United States. Poindexter is a former member of the first Bush administration and of the Reagan administration. He got all wrapped up in that Iran-Contra deal where the United States Central Intelligence Agency was caught red-handed trafficking cocaine for arms, for money, for anti-democratic insurgents in Nicaragua, no?
Oh, yes.
And Poindexter is now the head of an office, I forget what it's called, for the second Bush administration, which I would title the Office of Total Surveillance. And this act would give him a control over and a right to access all the telephone calls coming in and out of anybody's house, all the bank card and credit card transactions that happen as they happen on the part of anybody, all the email and passwords and internet interactions and chat sessions. I mean, nothing would be safe anymore from the government's prying eyes. It sounds like something out of an Orwell novel, but the fact is the technology is here today if you spend, you know, billions of dollars to do that. But the guy that they would put in charge of it, this guy Poindexter, and we have an article linked on Narco News to a publication based in Costa Rica in the Central American country that says that country's Congress declared the same Mr. Poindexter persona non grata. He can't enter Costa Rica because they looked at the evidence that he was a narco trafficker and said, we don't want people like that around here. This is who's in charge of the system. Now, even if the nicest, best person was in charge of the surveillance system, it would still be evil because it could slip into the hands of somebody like John Poindexter. But the fact that they're making this plan so that he can have access to your and my email and to your and my phone calls and to your and my financial records, I'm not sure that that makes the United States safe from terrorism. I think, frankly, it's along the lines, well, if you can't beat them, join them. We'll become the terrorists then. So that's one of the dangerous factors of these laws. Now, it may be 10 years from now that courts and judges will overrule these things, but in the meantime...
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite the callers to please... give us a call here if you got a question for Mr. Al Giordano, publisher of NarcoNews.com. Our number here is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. We're going to take just a quick little break, and we'll be back to take your calls.
The war that they wage on drugs, that they wage on marijuana, as a consequence, the most beautiful flowers of our bouquet of rights have been destroyed by law enforcement.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
That first speaker was Tony Sarah, noted San Francisco attorney. We do have some callers in. I see first up we have Richard Lake there on line 2. Can you punch him up? Hello, Richard.
Hi.
Hello, sir. How are you this evening?
Hey, Richard. Yes.
Hi.
Do you have a question for Mr. Al Giordano?
I certainly do. Al, first of all, we all want to thank you for bringing us the news from Latin America, because, quite honestly, we get very little insight through the American press, and you bring it to us, so we really appreciate it. My question relates to a post I saw on one of the email lists where you discussed reform and how you think it works from inside out. And I thought, outside in.
Yes,
and I thought it was fascinating, and I would like you to perhaps discuss all that a little bit, because we're certainly in some turbulent times in reform, too, with several initiatives lost.
But, you know, I wouldn't say it's turbulent at all. I mean, elections are elections, and they come and go, but they don't change the general strength of a movement. And the fact is, there were some major victories on election day this month, and in the urban centers, in places like San Francisco and the city of Washington D.C. But the cause marches on. It took Ronald Reagan four times of running for president before he was elected. If you had said, oh, well, his first campaign or his second campaign or his third campaign were failures, you, of course, wouldn't be taking into account that they set up the nature for his election, which nobody thought would happen in the previous years. And the same is true not just of say, a conservative Republican like Ronald Reagan, but of a social Democrat in France like François Mitterrand. Or even of a most recent example, President Lula da Silva in Brazil, who was just elected on his fourth try. The fourth try was the charm to the presidency of his country. So if, you know, still on the overall math, the majority of drug policy reform referenda in the United States have won more often than they've lost. And I don't think that the movement for reform has lost any ground. I just think that in this atmosphere of the officially inspired war on terrorism, it's very hard to get the electorate to focus on the details of these things. I think in a year, 2 years from now, we'll be looking at different results again already, more positive results.
Well, thank you, Al. And I'll let you go on to other callers.
Richard, we thank you for your call.
Yes, thank you, Richard, and for the good work that you do. Of course, it reaches our radar screen here in Latin America as well.
I'm hanging with giants here, folks. These guys are doing wonders for the whole country. Richard, thank you, sir. Okay, looks like next up we have John. Are you on the line there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, John. Do you have a question for Mr. Al Giordano?
Sure. I just want to first of all echo Richard's thanks. Sometimes it seems like the only real news is narco news. So thanks a lot, Al. You're doing great.
I know. It's kind of sad. Oh, the little, just a little website, you know. I would say, though, that among North American new daily newspapers in Houston, you folks have the Houston Chronicle, and that John Otis from time to time does crack through with a very good story.
It's getting better.
And so, I mean, you're very lucky. The New York Times doesn't have anybody in Latin America who cracks through with a very good story from time to time.
Right. Hey, well, let me ask you this, okay? You know, a year ago, we watched President Vicente Fox of Mexico, as he stated that he saw the only real solution to the drug problem was legalization. And several high officials, governors, various states, and even officials in his administration were even carrying further, more detailed statements. And then now, suddenly today, or well, not today, but the last few days, President Fox has come and announced that he's going to institute a DEA-type persecution of drug users. So what's going on? It seems like a huge turnaround.
Well, that's talk by politicians, and you have to take anything a politician says with a grain of salt, no? I mean, the fact is that Fox, in a moment of candor, said what his true opinion is, what the true opinion is of any polydoctor already on the payroll and the go, which that you have to legalize drugs to get rid of the narco, to get rid of these bribes, to get rid of the corruption, to get rid of the violence. Mm-hmm. And but he also said, but of course Mexico can't do it alone.
Right.
He's under enormous amounts of pressure from Washington in order, I mean, he's trying to get through immigration reforms, he's trying to get economic help and these sorts of things. And so he said that, well, of course, Mexico can't do it alone, implying that the United States would have to do it first. Mm-hmm. However, there's another school of thought in Latin America that says, what if the nations of South and Central America and Mexico join together in the spirit of, say, the European Union, or of the United States for that matter, mm-hmm. join together into one body and said, we're together going to change our drug policies to be more humane, to spend less taxpayer money on this madness and that sort of thing. What would happen then? Well, then the United States would have less ability to create an economic embargo, or even worse, as in Colombia, military intervention against a country that wasn't following its line a lockstep and duty, no?
Right. What I was really hoping was Mexico and Canada would give each other strength, you know, and
well,
get kind of a sandwich there.
There is a bit of a pincer effect, as I like to call it.
Right.
And one of the things that I think is very significant coming up in the next 3 months is in mid-February 2003, in the city of Mérida, Yucatán, which is on the Yucatán Peninsula of Mexico, it's that part that sticks out into the Caribbean,
right.
It is going to be, for the first time ever, a international drug legalization summit with leading political figures and journalists and experts and activists and everybody else who's concerned, health professionals, doctors, civil libertarian attorneys, representatives of indigenous and labor organizations. They're all going to be coming together for the first time ever to talk about drug policy and to begin to formulate a international and particularly a Latin American-wide, or what they say up north is a Pan-American a drug strategy to do away with this ridiculous drug prohibition. And this is going to be February 12th through 15th in Mérida. Now, you folks in Houston, this is something you should be aware of, because Continental Airlines has direct flights from Houston to Mérida. It's one of the few United States cities that does. And the conference organizers have organized a 10 to 15% discount for that direct flight.
Hmm.
So stuff is happening.
Let me ask you real quickly, just on this still, back to the crackdown that President Fox has announced, do you think that will have real significant change and ramifications on the crackdown on the consumers?
Well, you know, the president of Mexico is just that, the president. He's got to get any major initiatives through the Congress. I'm not sure he gets something like that through Congress. You know why? There's no money in Mexico. There's, the government's just broke. It's out of money. Do they have money to put some poor medical marijuana patient or some poor drug addict or recreational drug user in prison here? No, they really don't. And so I wouldn't, these are just the words of politicians. You have to look at what's going on under the surface.
Gentlemen, I want to interrupt here. John, thank you for your call. We have some other callers, and I got to get to them here. I only got an hour. Thank you, John.
Right.
Any others you might want to call in, it's 713-526- 5738. Looks like we're going to Doug from Houston. Doug, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Doug, you have a question for Mr. Giordano?
Yes, sir. It's kind of a hardball question. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. In general, I am against drugs, including marijuana. I am also against putting people in prison. I think the positions are consistent. What I would favor is social policy where drugs are available for people that want them, but they're inconvenient, where people have to go through some trouble to get them, therefore discouraging use. Now, roughly, I would classify cocaine and alcohol together. You know, people certainly get strung out on coke, and it is highly destructive to their lives, you know, as well as people do go out and commit armed robberies to support a coke habit. And even if it's cheaper with legalization, there'd still be people strung out committing armed robberies. Even marijuana.
Yeah, but they need to commit less armed robberies.
Well, I quite agree. But on balance, you know, even though I'm wanting to say the pleasure of coke is real pleasure, you know, I've known people that have used coke and have seemed to use it responsibly, but on balance, it's not a good thing. Now, I'd say even about marijuana, which I think is less harmful than alcohol, I can remember when I was up at University of Texas, Austin, on orientation, a guy in there from high school was going to drive back from Austin to Houston with some of his buddies, smoking weed for the whole way. And to me, that's not responsible. You know, he's, you know, risking your life. I know it's not as bad as drunk driving, but it's not so hot. I guess that's pretty much what I want to say. I guess I'll hang up.
Well, you said you had a football question. I'm not sure what the question is. Well, don't come from my tobacco. You peel my cigarettes from my cold, dead hands, okay?
I mean, I'm not in favor of marijuana. Honestly,
we don't have to be in favor of these things. I'm in favor of regulating drugs that I would never want to use. The point is a behavior good or bad? The question is how you minimize the harm of it, how you make it safer, and how, most of all, I mean, if somebody wants to go and destroy his or her own life, that's one thing. But how do you keep that from destroying the lives of innocent people and emptying the pocketbooks of the taxpayer?
On all of those, I'm not that impressed with marijuana. I mean, I'm not that impressed with alcohol.
Right, you said it enough times. You sound like Bill Clinton.
I'm with you. I mean, I'm with you maybe 80% of the way. We ought not be putting people in prison. And I'd like you, I know I've said it, you know, enough times, but I'd like you to articulate where I'm coming from. Certainly you've met other people like me. I mean, I'm kind of like Ward Cleaver. You know, I want to lay down some sensible guidelines for the boys.
Well, sure.
And I know adolescents are going to experiment. And I further know that changing your consciousness is a human trait. We do that just sitting down, getting a TV dinner and turning on the TV. A little bit, you change your consciousness.
Doug, can I throw in one thought here?
Help me out.
Do you think it's responsible adult behavior to throw a 17-year-old in jail with hardened criminals for smoking a joint?
I think that is awful. I think that is more destructive than the drug.
Well, and there you go. I mean, where should our responsibility lie? And
well, I like to think, like I said at the beginning, make it available but inconvenient. Where there's certain stores in Houston, you know, the hours aren't the most convenient. You can only buy a small quantity, whatever, so that it's a hassle to get it. You know, there's no black market because it is available, but we're discouraging use.
He wants to make it like cigarettes, where we have to go out in the freezing cold to catch pneumonia in the name of public health.
Right. Doug, I want to thank you for your call.
I know. I'm taking the time. Thank you, gentlemen. Keep up the
thank you, sir. Nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, too.
Okay, we do have some more phone lines open. Our number here is 713-526-5738. We do have Jewel from A-Leaf on line 4.
You get a lot of phone calls here.
And hello, Jewel.
Hey, Dean.
Good evening.
How are you tonight?
I'm well. It's good to hear your voice. Do you have a question for Mr. Giordano?
Oh, actually, I wanted some feedback on 3 points. I'd like to hear what he has to say. I'm kind of thinking outside the box. about why we shouldn't be focusing our energies on campaign finance reform, getting the money, the lobbyists out of D.C., who are really the ones keeping this illegal. And the other, well, actually two. And the other one is that why don't we deny this comparison to cocaine and marijuana? You know, one time on the show I talked to you, and it was like saying you sit down to a convenience store to rob it, he's high on coke, he's going to kill everybody in there. But you send the guy on marijuana in there to rob the store, he'll trade his gun for a bag of chips. It's entirely different.
Yes.
And I don't think we've spent enough time making the distinction.
Well, it's the drug warriors that don't want that distinction made. They want to keep marijuana an ugly,
cocaine, heroin. Those kinds of things.
Al, is it true that in much of Mexico, Central and South America, that the use, possession, personal use and possession of drugs is basically legal?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, there are some countries where it's been decriminalized, but it's for the same time. I mean, I wouldn't urge anyone to go south of the border with any illegal substance because it's very arbitrary. You could end up in prison for a long time, too.
Well, but perhaps for a local, it's not such a big deal as it would be for a gringo to walk down there.
Well, the average, the average citizen, you know, understands that if somebody's an addict, they're an addict, and they may have their problems, but if they're not causing problems for anyone else, they certainly don't belong in valuable jail space. These aren't whipped into a frenzy by these silly Super Bowl ads down here, you know?
Yeah.
There's a different sense of priorities, as I think there is in the United States, too, among working people and poor people, and people who really sweat and work for a living. I think have a different sense of this than, say, somebody, you know, sitting out in the suburbs somewhere who only gets their information from television.
Right.
Our caller had two questions.
Yes,
the campaign finance reform.
Well,
getting the money out of D.C.
Yeah, now there you've opened up a real can of worms, but it needs to be opened.
It sure does.
Because you can't even run for political office anymore unless you have millions of dollars at your command. Why do you need big money to run for political office? Because in order to become known by the public, in order to get your message out to the voters, you have to buy very expensive ads on TV and radio and in the newspapers. But more than everything on TV,
we're the real winners in all of this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you follow the money trail of political campaigns, 50% of 50 cents of every dollar goes to the media. And so it's no wonder that the media hasn't blown the whistle on this. Now, I think that frankly, in the United States, for example, the silver bullet to stop all this would be to say, as the law used to recognize, that the airwaves are not private property. When that signal is transmitted from that TV tower or that radio tower to your house or your car or your business, that is crossing over public airspace, air that belongs to all the people. And so therefore, to have a license to operate a TV or radio station or to use public wires for cable or anything like that, TV stations and radio stations should be required under law to give free airtime to any candidate from any party who qualifies for the ballot. Now, of course, the rich people would be very upset because then they would lose their monopoly over who has access to the public. And you would see more people. You would see the kind of people we've been listening to tonight calling into this program suddenly for the first time have the chance to rise to high elected office instead of this elite, you know, silver spoon born in their mouth crowd that tends to to get elected to political office because they have access to money, it would suddenly be open to everyone. It would radically change the system. But, of course, the leaders in Congress don't have the huevos to do it, no?
No.
And so, yeah, you need to, I mean, campaign finance reform is very important. How do you start that argument in a political discourse that's dominated by the very media that profits most from this corruption? That I don't know. But but you're on the right track by discussing it and by advocating it, and I think you're correct.
You know, I'm a lesbian, and many years ago the big theme came about, and that we were supposed to come out. And I think that marijuana users need to start coming out, so that people recognize that they're your neighbors, they're your friends, and that they are not these reefer madness fiends.
Jewel, on that point, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're running out of time here for this segment. I got a couple other things to run here near the end. But
cool.
I do appreciate your call.
We'll chat tomorrow night.
I'll be in touch with you all tomorrow night on the After Hour show.
Okay.
I appreciate your input.
Sure.
And I would agree that it is time to step out of the closet, so to speak, I think as Jewel was alluding to there. We had a question from one last thing for you here, Al. A guy, the nickname Mel5 from the Drug Sense chat, he says, what would happen if everyone who wanted marijuana re-legalized picked a day and descended upon police stations all over the country demanding to be arrested?
Well, you'd certainly see a rise in the prison population, but freedom isn't free, and from time to time, civil disobedience is what changes the United States, and I'm sure it will come to that point with the drug war.
I agree. Al, are there any closing comments you'd like to make to my listeners?
No, just that for those of you who do tune into the internet, I understand not everybody does, but a lot of people do, and of course there's nothing better to do when you're on the job than use the boss's internet account. Just tune into www.narconews.com, and we've got reports going up there every day about what's happening throughout the entire hemisphere, breaking the information blockade. We're translating the work of Latin American journalists. We've got our own journalists now. We've got a very growing team of authentic journalists now in all corners of Latin America, breaking the information blockade and sending it back to the United States in English and in Spanish, what's going on down here, because this is your taxpayer dollars at work. If people have questions, they can write to me at narconews@hotmail.com. That address also appears on our internet site. So stay tuned. And, those of you who are real involved in this issue, I hope you and your listeners will all consider coming to Merida on February 12th through 15th. Bring your sweetheart, because the Valentine's Day is in those states, and it's a wonderful city. It's a tropical environment. There are beaches nearby, and what better way to say I love you than to bring someone to the Drug Legalization Summit in Merida?
Sounds like a wonderful adventure to me, Al. I thank you, sir. We'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Houston. And thank you, Dean.
You bet. Good night.
Take care.
All right, next up we got Steve's going to do the Activist Corner. Are you ready, Steve?
I think so. We got a few things coming up. Coming up this Monday on the 18th, the Drug Policy Forum of Texas will be having their monthly meeting at the Unitarian Universalist Church. That's at Fannin and Southmore. It's going to be starting about 7 p.m. That's Monday the 18th. Then coming up on Thursday, Houston Normal will be having their monthly meeting at the Golden Island Buffet Restaurant. That's going to start about 7:30, and that's located at 901A North Shepherd in the Heights. Again, that's Thursday the 21st. And also coming up December 2nd, Cop Watch is going to be having training sessions. That's December 2nd. You can call 713-559-1359 For more information, they've also got a website, www.HoustonCopWatch.org. So be sure to check that out if you want to fight police abuse. And also coming up early next year, the Journey for Justice will be coming up. So that's some things coming up if you want to get active in your community. And next up, we have an interview that Dean did with Irv Rosenthal.
Speaking with Irvin Rosenfeld, who is soon to celebrate 20 years of using Uncle Sam's medical marijuana. Irv, tell us about what this 20 years and more represents to you, please.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate what the government has done as far as allowing me to have a quality of life over these last 20 years that I definitely wouldn't have had without it. What the cannabis has done for me is, without the marijuana, because of the bone tumors I have all throughout my body, I've got tremendous pain. I have tremendous muscle tension to where I will hemorrhage and tear veins and tear muscles. And I also have anti-inflammatory aspects on every tumor. And the cannabis takes care of all that, better than any prescribed medicine I've ever had. So I don't have all the muscle tension. I don't have the muscle spasms and the hemorrhaging as bad. I don't have the inflammation around the tumors as bad. And my right ankle that's inoperative because of a tumor in my ankle, the intractable pain is less severe. So I'm able to mostly maintain a pretty normal life. I'm a stockbroker here in Florida and married almost 30 years, a member of a disabled sailing program in Miami called Shake a Leg. So the last 20 years has meant to me a quality of life that I never would have had without it. Now, in fact, we just had April a year ago a complete evaluation on the four of us patients, and everything's shown that after all these years of using marijuana, for me almost 21 years now, everything is perfectly normal with my health. But, you know, the other side is always going to come out saying something this, something that, which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with looking at the risk of something like that, because any drug is going to could cause a risk. However, you have to look at the other side of it, too. What is the risk of not using the drug? And so that's the real danger here, is that we have patients that modern medicine or other medicines isn't working for. And so to use the medicine they need, which is marijuana, they're becoming criminals to do it.
That was Irv Rosenthal. I want to talk about a man I met a couple of years back, and I thought he was a fuddy-duddy. I didn't know if I wanted to work with him. I've come to very much respect him for his work. He and Jerry Epstein at the Drug Policy Forum of Texas are doing great work. I want to play just a little promo that talks about them. Anyway, I'm talking about Al Robison, the executive director of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. There exists an organization based in Houston comprised of doctors, nurses, judges, educators, and many other professionals, the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. Their founder and executive director, G. Allen Robison, is the distinguished professor of pharmacology at the University of Texas Health Science Center, the man who first proved there is no lethal dose of marijuana, and who, with his associates, works with state and local governments to change the medieval drug law. We are winning, but we can prevent thousands of drug war casualties with your help. Please contact the Drug Policy Forum of Texas at www.dpft.org or call 713-784-3196. This time of budget shortfalls has really hurt the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. If you'd like to assist that organization, be part of the solution to help end the drug war, please contact them at dpft.org or, as I said, phone call 713-784-3196. I want to let you all know the promo packs for your donations to Cultural Baggage will be issued soon. I want to let everybody know that CDs of this show and all our prior guests featuring Al Giordano, Judge Gray, etc. are available on the web. Visit our site, www.cultural-baggage.com/kpft.htm, or call my home phone number, 281-752-9198. The information on these CDs might just be the ticket to move your brother-in-law, who's a quasi-drug prohibitionist, off his high and mighty seat, or perhaps your congressman needs to hear some unvarnished truth. Once again, I want to thank our listeners who made this the highest dollars pledge per minute of any of the overnight shows. There are people in all religions, all organizations that make their living by preying on, not really praying for, those who use drugs they disapprove of.
Who are the people who make their living inciting and continuing bombing campaigns, destroying habitat, and destroying lives of those they consider expendable? Who does this so they can make a good living? The so-called compassionate conservative Christians. They pull off better scams than anybody out there on the net. Recently, I heard the Reverend Jennison Franklin of the Kingdom Connection, and he had some really scary things to say, and I felt his words belonged on tonight's War of Terror Playhouse. Reverend Franklin was talking about letting smokers get high for 30 days.
Dose every day for 30 days, and they let them get high. At the end of that 30 days, without telling the pot smokers, they took THC, which is the high-producing element in marijuana, they took it out. The chemical that produces the high feeling, they took out of the marijuana, and yet, when the guys started smoking the pot, they got just as high as they did before. And they concluded the study by saying it is possible that when you believe in the drug that you're taking, you can get something. This is medical doctors. You can get something besides a chemically induced high. When I read that, I thought about the fact that the Bible calls sorcery and witchcraft in the Greek in the book of Revelation. It's the same word pharmakeia from which we get the word pharmacy or drug usage. Could it be any time you yield your mind to a drug that you can give yourself over to a demonic state, that Satan can slip a demon spirit around you that begins to bind you outwardly but eventually gets inside of you so that you cannot free yourself from it? Nobody takes cocaine without first smoking dope. It all starts with a little compromise. And first they are entangled. And after they are entangled, they are overcome. And the latter end is worse than the beginning.
Prohibition is evil. The terror that surrounds this planet, the fear that separates and agitates this world, is the result of prohibition. For the U.S., our fear of certain weapons, immoral sexual behaviors, and controlled drugs serve as prime examples of the eternal futility of prohibition. Huge numbers of people have taken a firm stance in regard to gun control. Nobody wants a world where armed criminals rob our unarmed homes, yet this has resulted in many countries where individual ownership of guns is prohibited. Sexual relations excite in more ways than one. The idea of consenting adults doing what they please with their own gonads is, for most people, none of their concern. Certain others feel compelled by God and the morals of their father to prohibit certain uses of our gonads. The moralistic posturing, the inclusion of ancient superstition and pseudo-religious bluster is offered up with great excitement. Insofar as drug prohibition is concerned, it's as big or a little problem as we want it to be. Before the impetus of prohibition, the smoking of marijuana in the U.S. was almost unheard of. Now, 65 years after the federal prohibition began, Time magazine reports that 97 million Americans have smoked pot. The powers that be, the prison industrial complex with its million or more adherents, want prohibition to eternally pay their house notes. Because they have the bully pulpit of law enforcement, government, religion, and media, and billions of our tax dollars to spend on their propaganda, they have ruled for almost a century. However, the primary tool of the drug warriors is slipping from their grasp. They claim the moral high ground, but that's soon going to disappear, leaving in its stead a million war criminals. Truth now rises like a phoenix from every nation on earth, including the USA, and will soon restore harm reduction and drug reform to their rightful place, the moral high ground, leaving the prohibitionists standing as war criminals with their pants down and their lies exposed. Now that would be exciting.
We have had discussions with an agent of the Drug Enforcement Administration. It's our hope he'll be our guest on Cultural Baggage next week. Thank you to my listeners on KPFT and on the Sirius Radio Network.
For my producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Beckford for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth.